From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 21st day of March 2017. It's National Ag Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. We'll hear an update of the Farm Bill debate taking place in Washington, D.C. AgriPulse held a Farm Bill discussion earlier in the week. Jonathan Kappas from the U of I was there. We'll also hear from the new dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. She's been assessing the value of all the parts of the college, extension, teaching, research, and outreach programs, and she has some thoughts on how those programs should work together to provide information to farmers and consumers and other types of end users. Then as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. Looks like it could be an interesting spring in the Midwest and across the United States. Don Day will be here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. It is National Ag Day. Thank a farmer. If you see them on the phone line with us is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, thanks for being here, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it's not quite turnaround Tuesday, but better than it was yesterday. What happened in the marketplace today?
Well, we got half of a turnaround here today. We could get it, the corn, of course, it's a chart action from yesterday turned a lot of people just a little bit negative. The idea that the funds were now short rather than long coming into yesterday, and then sort of the collapse because of just the futures moving on down and having their turnaround on Friday, and then yesterday was a confirmation of that. So we actually saw a couple of the big firms that did recommend making some sales today in the December corn. The beans turned around. Today's the first day of the 2017 RFS. It puts in place a 15 billion gallon conventional biofuel requirement, and that rallied the oil a little bit that way, and of course we saw the dollar on down. So that along with that put the beans back up a little bit today, so we only got half of a turnaround.
Now, some people are thinking to themselves, why would the conventional, which would normally be corn ethanol, manage to rally the market? I take it it's the gap that needs to be filled, and that can be filled with other fuels, no matter what they are. In fact, that first conventional doesn't have to be filled with corn-based ethanol at all. So I suppose that must be the reason they're looking forward to maybe bean oil filling some of that gap area for the conventional on the RFS on 2017.
You know, that's one of the thoughts going along out there. You know, the other thing we looked at was Pro Farmer yesterday come out with their guesstimates here. 89.3 million acres of beans and 90.9 million acres of corn falls right in line with about everything we've been looking at here as far as that goes. One of the things was that oil took over a little bit when meal dropped below its 100 and 200 day moving average, which also turned around and sort of spiked the trade between the bean, the oil and the meal, Todd. The dollar hit a six-week low, too, which that sort of helped us turn around with the idea that maybe we can move a few more beans into China while we're having some problems shipping out of South America.
And speaking of South America, Ed, do we have any new news from there, or we just know they've got a big crop?
It continues to get big. The weather forecasts look like it's going to have some very good growing conditions for their safrinha corn. And out of one of the other countries down there, why we saw that their production was going to be up also. So it looks like the South America is going to continue to be a big supplier of corn and beans for this year.
I take it that wheat fell on weather forecast for maybe some rainfall over the next several weeks in some of those hard red winter wheat growing regions of the nation that have been so dry?
You know, we started the day off a little stronger because most of the crop ratings yesterday were down about 2% in the western belts of the wheat there, and we were a little higher on that. And then, of course, as that rain forecast come on out, well, we sort of dipped on the day. So, yes, we were higher at first on the crop ratings and then lower on the forecast weather later in the day.
Any expectations for the rest of the week at this time?
I think it's going to be sort of a choppy week watching what goes on, but I do think that basically we're pretty close to support levels here in both the corn and the beans, and it's going to be a rather choppy trade. I think that you buy dips and sell rallies, and it's going to be a very tight range until we can get those numbers on the 31st.
Hey, thanks, Wayne. We appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, we'll focus on the Farm Bill. Farm leaders told a national Farm Bill forum sponsored by AgriPulse that getting more money for the 2018 bill was a big challenge, but urged producers to hang together or end up getting less government support. American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall told the Farm Bill Summit that after losing half its income in the last 4 years, agriculture needs more, not less help in the next Farm Bill, and farmers must stay engaged to get there.
The biggest problem of this Farm Bill and writing the next Farm Bill will be resources. The baseline that the CBO has is not enough to actually have a good safety net for the food security of our country. And that's why at American Farm Bureau, we're asking for increases in that baseline so that we can build a true farm bill that helps us through the next 4 years after this one starts.
However, University of Illinois Ag Policy Director Jonathan Kappas says the Congressional Budget Office is already looking at a tougher budget situation. Producers are expected to switch 50% to 80% of corn and soybean acres out of ARC revenue coverage, paying less now, to PLC, price loss coverage, while continuing to rely heavily on crop insurance. And Kappas says the budgeting process is a zero-sum game.
The budget discipline process is a prioritization mechanism. Which items, which things do we want to put priorities in and continue spending, and where are we going to cut? The zero-sum game, right, is that we have this much money available to us. If you want to spend more somewhere here, you've got to cut somewhere else.
That sets up the difficulty of getting a 218-vote House majority and 60-vote Senate supermajority for a bill that fixes the dairy and cotton programs or boosts conservation programs like CRP and still maintains politically sensitive food stamp levels. Former Deputy Ag Secretary and now head of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, Chuck Connor, says farmers must stay united to neutralize efforts by non-farm groups to cut farm programs. Otherwise, there will be consequences.
Of course, if we are divided and a little bit indifferent, and I would argue we probably were that in 2014, then these groups will have a void to fill, and they will fill that void. And they will have success in altering significant portions of risk management, crop insurance, farm payments, et cetera.
Connor argues that producers, not non-farm groups, control that destiny, saying history shows you can have a good farm bill in tough budget years. By the way, next week, the House Ag Committee will be busy with three different farm bill hearings. You can check those out at the House Agriculture Committee website. Now up next, we'll talk about Extension 3.0 in the state of Illinois with the Dean of the College of Agricultural Consumer and Environmental Sciences, Kim Kidwell. Last fall, a brand new dean arrived here on the Urbana-Champaign campus in the Agricultural College, and she's been pretty busy assessing the whole of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, all of its parts, including the teaching, the research, and the extension portion of the program, the land grant mission that is Illinois. She has some thoughts about extension and how it should translate the research that's done here on campus. I talked with Kim Kidwell about Extension 3.0 and just exactly what that translation would look like.
When I talk about extension with people, I think about extension as being the pivotal component in the discovery, translation, transformation loop. So the way that this works for me is we do a tremendous amount of discovery work on this campus. And in fact, some of it is brilliant beyond almost words. The work that we do here is just stunning in the impact that it can have in transforming what we know about agriculture, what we know about human sciences, what we're doing in developing countries. It's very profound. But the challenge is getting that information into people's hands so they can use it to make informed decisions. And there's a gap between what we do in the discovery arena, how we translate that work to people, and then how people actually use that information to make decisions that really transforms lives. That's where it happens, when people use the results of our work to make a difference in their lives. 6 years ago, when the funding model changed in Extension, some important decisions were made. And that, those decisions were to shift some of the priority into urban areas, which is really important. And I think what we've seen over the last few years is an incredible input insurgence into what's going on in the 4-H arena, what's happening in urban settings, which is really important. And that work is just vital. We've stepped a bit away from our more commercial ag arenas. And a lot of it had to do with funding. So when you can't be all things to all people, you tend to focus on what you think you can do well. And I think in this state, you know, there's a tremendous need for support for people and communities, especially, you know, families that are struggling to make it every day. So the 4-H work and some of the outreach work we do with things like the SNAP Ed program and some of the community work is really quite profound. And we do a lot more work than we used to with some of our smaller grower organizations. But our corn and soybeans, bread and butter stakeholders, are wondering what happened to our Extension presence. And I've heard so much about that, it's made me really pause to think, okay, what caused this? Is this something that we need to address and take a look at? And where are we going to go next? So in that gap between discovery, the gap, translation and transformation, I've asked the question to a lot of people in Extension and in the faculty ranks, what do we want this to look like? Because I honestly do not believe that we can be as powerful and influential as we have the capacity to be unless we close that loop. And we have a very conscious discovery, translation, transformation model where we're really intending to do that. That is the goal of what we do. I love to tell people we transform lives. It's kind of something for me that is closely affiliated with the land-grant mission. But we cannot do that if we don't have a mechanism that consciously translates the discoveries we make on this campus into communities in the region and around the globe. So when I think about what Extension 3.0 might look like, it's about figuring out in a modern era how we close that loop between discovery, translation, and transformation.
Clearly, there are loops that are easier to close than others. Some practical science can be moved quickly to consumers and or farmers, but other types of research doesn't really make that transition without an intermediary very well, does it?
So there's more than one loop, right? So there's the applied work that goes directly through Extension into community members' hands, and they make those decisions in their households. There's that type of work. And we do a lot of applied research in lots of different venues. You know, one of my favorite stories is around the SNAP Ed program where, you know, we're doing some unbelievably good work to create a link between families that are on the SNAP Ed program and in a reduced need for health care. You know, that's information that every legislator in Springfield needs to know about because that's a decision-making talking point. And that work's being done with folks in ACE and with people in the Extension program. So it's important.
So there are two loops there, one to the legislator and one to the,
exactly.
the end user, the consumer.
So there's the end user, the consumer, and there's the legislative loop there. All of those are influential in one way or another. The other thing that's really important, too, about our discovery work is even for Monsanto or Syngenta or a company to pick that work up, they need to know that we did it, right? So we can make discoveries, and if the only place that really translates is in a publication that goes into a journal, that's one way to get your word out there. But the thing that has to happen is it has to build a bigger science picture that ends up solving a grand challenge of some sorts, right? So that industry loop is a different loop as well. And sometimes we're not the translator necessarily, or we're not the end product, where we catalyze what happens on the other end. So that's another loop to me as well.
Yeah, is it like a trademark or a copyright thing? When you get the bag of seed, does it say gene background supplied by University of Illinois?
Well, that's what I'd like to have happen, to be honest, because I think part of our challenge is, you know, when we actually put technology out there and people don't give us credit for what that source came from, that becomes a visibility problem for us.
Yeah, but that happens all the time.
Well, it's really tough. I don't think universities in general do this very well, if you want to know the truth. You know, it's like, I think we're dancing on this line between discovery work, innovation, entrepreneurialism, you know, royalty streams, patent streams, and all that stuff has some level of controversy underpinning it, you know. But anytime we make discoveries or we do really good work that can fuel an engine that provides an output that helps society, if any time that loop is broken, we haven't actually done the very best that we can do to serve the land-grant mission. And I want to have a meaningful conversation with people about how do we consciously do that in an era where meeting people face-to-face limits opportunity. We just don't have enough people and enough manpower to do that. So how do we do that? And actually, how do we underpin a funding mechanism for that so we can actually do it better? I'm not sure what Extension 3.0 looks like. I know it doesn't look like what we used to do, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And I know to be as effective as we need to be, it can't look like it looks now. We need to evolve it to the next level of excellence. And, you know, I do see that gap as being a problem because the visibility is all there. You know, when University of Illinois and the work we do here becomes invisible to people, they make a couple of assumptions. One is what we do doesn't matter. And two is they don't think we do anything that matters to them. Right? They don't know. It's buried so deep in a bag of soybeans that's branded by a company or in a product that isn't linked back to University of Illinois that we don't see how that research and those discoveries actually fuel their well-being. That's problematic. And I think some of it is about us being clear with people, look, we want to work with you. And what we need in support is for you to acknowledge our contribution, whatever that looks like. That becomes an important aspect. So at least it's out front that, wow, this work started at University of Illinois. And guess what? It's important to me.
So who are the stakeholders you want to hear from?
Oh, you know, I'm interested in, I'm actually very interested in hearing from the people that are happy about why they're happy with what we're doing in Extension, why it matters to them. I'm interested in hearing from people that are frustrated with us. You know, I want to know what they think we can do better and how they can partner with us to get to the end result they're seeking. I want to hear from people in the Extension system about what they think they can do to adjust or what we need to do to support them. I want to hear from our researchers and our faculty about what we think each individual's ownership on outreach is. Is it my responsibility to do my best job to make sure people know my research matters and what it does? You know, I can cheat so easily on this because I was a wheat breeder and I had to do this, right? I was not successful if people did not grow my varieties. And so it was a natural fit to do the discovery work, put those genes or that methodology into wheat variety, and then go out and talk to farmers about it. If they liked it, they grew it. That loop was very natural in what I did for a living. It's not always that way for people, but, you know, I do think faculty are brilliant in some ways. And I think if we say to people, you know, let's think about closing that loop. Let's think about going from discovery to translation and transformation. Like, what do we as a system do to support that? And how can you be part of that? Or what do you need to do? Or how do we need to support you to make that happen? That our end goal is to close the loop, not just discovery. Discovery is crucial and it's important and I love it. But at the end of the day, if we're going to transform lives, we've got to think about getting that information all the way through the loop so we can have the most impact that we can have because it matters to us how we help people. And it also matters to us that people realize that what we do matters. It impacts their lives and that we say, hey, look, this is how we do this. This is what's important to us. So they have some relevance about, wow, you know, University of Illinois does some pretty amazing work and I want to be a part of that.
Kim Kidwell is the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Took some time to look forward with us at the future of Extension in the state of Illinois. It is National Ag Day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Back in 2 minutes with the weather forecast. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 21st day of March. Don Day is here now from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the weather forecast. Let's start right here in the United States. Don, what do you find of most interest and where will the weather of intensity be?
Well, it's going to be a pattern here starting later this week that is going to go for a good 2 or 3 weeks at least, where we're going to see a lot of weather go coast to coast. Last week, we had the cold and the snow along the eastern seaboard in New England. Now our attention is focusing out on the west coast, where we're going to see a series of storms roll off the Pacific, and without any big high pressure to stop these storms,
We're going to see wet weather return to the West Coast, California getting some rain today. Then we're going to see what should be a significant spring storm pop up in the Colorado Rockies. We are going to see significant snows in the Rockies. And more importantly, and I think this will be something that will be important, we're going to see significant rain and thunderstorm activity over some of the very dry areas of Kansas, the Panhandle areas, up into Nebraska, eastern Colorado. Some of those winter wheat areas are going to get some needed precipitation. And then these storms are going to go right into the Midwest and Corn Belt. And we're going to see a wet pattern developing.
So that area that runs from the southwest in parts of Texas through the Panhandle, Oklahoma, up into Kansas, Missouri, and southern Illinois, parts of Indiana, you think will get wet enough that it will reverse what has been fairly dry conditions?
It certainly is looking that way. In fact, for the next 30 to 45 days, we're going to see a very active pattern where we're going to have an east to west storm track that will go right through those areas you just mentioned. I think if there's areas that may miss out, it'll be portions of the southeast and the far southern plains. But many of the dry areas in the central plains and the central and western Corn Belt, as it looks now, over the next month, have some really good opportunities to reverse that trend.
Is there one big factor on the global system that's pumping that or will be pumping that kind of precipitation into these areas?
Well, we have a very interesting, it's been a very interesting winter in the sense that it started with a weak La Nina, and then it went to neutral, and now we're going into a weak El Nino. And that type of pattern in the Pacific is generating a very active and very moist storm track across the central Pacific. With that combined with the changing seasons, which normally get more active anyway, are going to be enhancing things a little bit. So I do have some cautious optimism for many of the dry areas of the central United States will be able to get through this spring and get into early summer with hopefully a much better soil moisture profile.
And then I hate to make this a footnote, but the southeast will not get this kind of rainfall and may very well stay pretty darn dry.
Yeah, that is an area of concern. I do see Georgia, Alabama, Florida, maybe the Carolinas, while they're certainly going to see some spring precipitation, they may end up on the short end of the stick, at least as it's looking now. And that's going to be one area of concern heading into summer.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.